we're going to be in the market to sell our home, and just the tips we got tonight, if tonight were the only night, it would have been well worth it.
I figured we'd stay in our house for a few years and then sell it and then go to something nicer. And now we're thinking, why do that when we could just save that money and then some point down the road buy a house with cash? How much better is that to have a house that's paid for?
I've moved a lot with my jobs in the past and know a little bit about the real estate and what to look for, but it gave me a lot more insight as to what to look for to make a more knowledgeable selection.
One area that I think would have been very useful for me was real estate. Because we did move 16 times during my career. I mean, how many opportunities is this to make decisions? Do we buy? Do we rent? What do we do? Well, we bought when we should have sold and sold what we should have bought.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome nationally syndicated radio host and best-selling author, Dave Ramsey.
Thank you. Thank you. That's fine. Thank you. All right. I am telling you, this lesson is a lot of fun because this is the dream of most Americans, the great American dream. And the sad thing is, if you do it wrong, it can and has for many families become the great American nightmare. Real estate. And the one thing that you buy that is more expensive than real estate, the mortgage on the real estate. Learning to buy a piece of real estate and sell a piece of real estate as your home or as an investment is a key to your financial peace. Because if you do a whole bunch of these other things wrong and you make massive real estate mistakes, you start impulsing or purchasing the wrong kinds of property because you didn't have the know-how. Man, when you start doing real estate, I mean, stupid has zeros on the end, doesn't it? You can really mess this thing up. And having owned over 1,000 pieces of real estate, over 1,500 pieces of real estate in my life, I used to buy and sell for a living, and I grew up in the real estate business. My parents were realtors as I was a child. I have watched this business and watched how it works and what works from the inside out to where, with me, it's almost common sense. But a lot of us violate a lot of common sense. And so I want to walk us through this subject that is so important, mainly because it's so expensive. Let's look at real estate and mortgages. Be ready to write in your workbooks as we give you the answers here on the screen as usual. Number one, when selling a home, you need to think like a retailer. Let's talk about selling. Okay, we put our home up for sale a few years ago. Our children were little. I had a toddler and a couple of little grade schoolers, and they didn't understand because I grew up in the business. And I know that when you put your home up for sale, it is no longer your home. It is now a model home. You are not allowed to live here. At least we better not see any signs that you live here. No little greasy fingerprints. They're not cute. They're messy, it's a nightmare, and these people that are looking at your house can't overlook it. You have to think and walk through there and take your glasses off and put a buyer's glasses on and look at your house through their eyes. You have to think like a retailer. Walk into that room and go, junky, junky, junky. We got to clean this thing up, okay? Walk into that garage and go, get out here, clean this thing up. Get all the kids, family project, throw about 90% of that out. You're going to when you move anyway. So you might as well get it ready and not let it affect the marketing. Think like it's a new model home and it's a vision. Well, it's not. Well, let me tell you, that's what the other person down the street with that other for sale sign said. And when they looked at it and come look at yours and it's sparkly clean and requires no imagination, they don't have to imagine that the cobwebs aren't there. They don't have to imagine that the carpet color was different. They don't have to imagine anything. right? They can see themselves living in this house without having to imagine anything. They're going to buy your house. So you have to think like a retailer when you're selling. The home needs to be in near perfect condition. How many times as a realtor have I tried to show a property and it says painting and carpet allowance? What that means is the place is a trash hole. It's awful, it's ugly, and you're going to hold your nose while you walk through it and cover your eyes, and you really have to have been in construction to visualize what this thing would look like when you fix it with the allowance they gave you. Okay, what that meant was people too lazy or too broke to fix up the house. And it's not that hard and it's not that expensive. It's not that big a deal. But you've got to get this thing ready to sell. We're talking little bitty things and a bunch of elbow grease will cost you thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. Because think about it. A lot of people's house payment is $1,000. If it sits there 2 extra months because you didn't clean up the kitchen, that's a couple of $1,000 cleanup job. Because you paid 2 payments you wouldn't have paid otherwise. So this is an expensive process to make mistakes in. Get this home ready to sell. Do the paint. Do the lawn care. Do the wallpaper. Do the little stuff that doesn't cost a lot of money, but that is elbow grease, that is 90% labor, and let's get this thing spick and span. I mean, get out there, edge the sidewalk, make everything, stand back, look at the bushes, look at the landscaping. One of the most important things you can keep in mind is that curb appeal really, really does matter. If you think like a retailer, the return on investment of fix-up dollars is enormous, and curb appeal is that a preparation and attention to detail on the curb. Curb appeal meaning, if you stand at the curb, is this home appealing? Let me tell you how much that matters. When realtors do statistical surveys and analysis of where the buyers come from, 60% of the buyers come from the recognition of the realtor's company and from the yard sign. Now, the yard sign did not make the sale. The yard sign told them it was for sale. They turned and looked and liked what they saw. So you need to go stand in the street, look at your house, and go, "Ew, you're going to have to cut some bushes." You know? You got to cut these big old, these things were put in 15 years ago. They are the bagworm bushes that ate the house. You know what I mean? They're on the side of the house. They're all over the place. I bought a home one time for renovation, big old long ranch house, and had these 25 and 35 year old shrubs all across the front. And these were not nice trees, okay? These were trash trees that had kept growing way too long. Okay, big old ugly bushes. And I came in with the landscaper. I said, "Okay, first thing is get a chipper and a chainsaw and just take it all out and let's start again." I drove up to the house I had bought a couple of days later to check on the work, and I drove past it. There was a pile of trees in the front yard ready for chipping the size of the house, and the house visually had grown 14 feet because those bushes were overshadowing it, and visually it looked like this little bitty dinky home out in the woods. And when we mowed all that down, there was this nice, big, beautiful, long home back there behind that garbage. So the right kind of visual approach with your landscaping, and then keep in mind, when they're walking up the sidewalk, what are they seeing? Okay, hey, look, isn't it weed? Problem, weed. See, that's a first impression. It's like a job interview. You don't get a second chance to make a first impression. When they walk up and stand on your front door while the realtor's getting the key out of the little lock box, what are they doing? They're looking, they're spending more time, many times, on that front porch getting ready to go in than they do in one entire room as they walk through the home sometimes. And so if you've got a cobweb in the corner of the front porch, the front door is peeling and needs paint, it's got handprints all over it, well, guess what? You just blew your first impression. You've got to have all that stuff perfect and ready. Think as a presentation. This is a marketing presentation when you're putting this home on the market. Now, you may not have a home on the market right now or may not be ready to, but someday you will, and you be sure you get this lesson back out and go through it because you'll learn something. When selling your home, statistical research has found that the best realtors helping you sell the home are worth more than they cost unless you are a seasoned pro. Now, for instance, in an area where the realtor charges 6% on a $100,000 home, that's a $6,000 commission. So you want to put a for sale by owner sign in the front yard and save the realtor's fees. Now, I'm big on saving money, and I'm big on not paying for something that doesn't justify itself. So I'm huge as a consumer advocate on that. But what we in the real estate business have found over the years, and I don't sell real estate for a living now, so it's okay if it was different, I would tell you, all right, that for sale by owner sign says something to a buyer. Now, think like a buyer for a minute. If you're going to walk up and try to buy from that for sale by owner, one thing that's running through your mind is, I'll get this cheaper because they don't have to pay a... Now, you can't both save the same realtor's fee. Okay? I can't sell you the house for $100 and you save the realtor's fee and buy it for $94. And so what ends up happening is we both negotiate through and the buyer ends up getting part of the realtor's fee. And so what happens is, you know, maybe $3,000 of the $6,000 I end up giving away because of a FSBO and because I'm negotiating face-to-face with you without a third-party intermediary between, which is always a much stronger negotiating position to have someone else that can good guy, bad guy a little bit back and forth and keep this thing rolling, right? Now, that and also people who sell four houses or five houses or seven houses in their lifetime tend to make mistakes that people that sell 30 and 40 and 50 houses a year don't make in the transaction process, in the negotiating of the contract. Actual mistakes in what the real value of the house is, what points are, how to do all of these different things with the closing attorney, what to expect when you get to the table so there are no surprises. A realtor brings all these things to the table, and by the time you really don't save the whole commission, the realtor sells the house faster because they have access to marketing tools that the public does not have access to, like the MLS, the multiple listing service. By the time they sell it faster, more likely to sell it and make fewer mistakes and don't have to negotiate away part of that commission, you end up actually making more on a good quality realtor than they cost you. So I recommend you get an excellent realtor. When selecting an excellent realtor, make sure they're in the MLS system, the multiple listing service. Now that is the old MLS that's been around for many, many years. That's the computer system where they list your home in the computer. Because most buyers, when they come into the marketplace, do not go out driving street to 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 find their possible three or four homes they want to look at. Now some people do that casually goofing off on a Sunday afternoon. But a serious buyer being transferred to that area does not play that game, okay? They go to the realtor types in four bedroom in that school system, in that price range, and boom, the 10 homes that meet that criteria pop up right out of the computer. Never select a realtor based on friendships or the fact that you are married to their brother. Double dumb. This is the largest asset you have to sell. If you're selling it, act like it. You need to interview these people. These are marketing consultants. Have them come in, do a presentation to try to earn your business. For instance, let's pretend you worked for me in one of the departments in my firm. And we decided after talking about it that you wanted to hire a marketing consultant to help the marketing of your department. Would we just hire the first Joe that walks through that was kin to somebody? Not if you want to keep your job working for me, you wouldn't. Okay, you would bring some people in and interview them. As we interviewed a marketing consultant that we were going to pay a $6,000 or a $12,000 or a $10,000 marketing consulting fee to, we would want to know that they had actually marketed something once, right? That they had a clue, that they had a track record. And so if someone's going to do that and they're going to market your home, your most expensive asset, then I suspect you would want to know that they know how to market themselves. So the material they present you about who they are should be professionally prepared. Otherwise, if they have absolutely nothing to their name but a business card, then that's how they're going to handle the marketing of your most expensive asset. Keep that in mind. But if they have a full list and a list of referrals and references, people they've sold homes for in your area that you can check out and it's professionally designed, you can see they've spent some time, energy, even money on it, then you know these people might be pros. And then you check their references. What else do I want to know about a marketing consultant? I want to know they've actually marketed something like I'm trying to market. Okay? If I'm trying to market a children's toy, then I don't care if they have jillions of years of experience in the clothing industry. It doesn't matter to me, right? I want to know they have done something similar to this and have won. Otherwise, why am I paying them? If we're going to go out here and learn the hard way, I can do that by myself, right? So in this case, I want to know that this realtor has sold some homes. More than three or four lately. Okay? As a matter of fact, you can't even make a living in the real estate business today because realtors pay all their own expenses mainly, in most cases, unless they're selling at least $1 million a year worth of real estate. So if they're not in the $1 million club, I wouldn't fool with them. See, that's 10 $100,000 houses in a year. Okay, that's not spit. They're not even averaging one sale a month to get in the $1 million club. Okay? And that's a big, hairy deal, or it used to be in the $1 million club. Let me tell you, if you're breathing in and out and showing up at the office in the real estate business, you ought to be in the $1 million club pretty quick, right? You're sucking on way too many donuts otherwise in the process, okay? So the deal is, I want someone that sells literally millions and millions of dollars worth of real estate. I want someone that sells 100 homes a year or 50 homes a year, especially in the area of town that I'm in. And I want to be able to talk to some of those people that says that he or she returned their phone calls and gave them service and knew and came in and made some nice, tactful, blunt suggestions about how to get my home ready to sell, something I didn't already know. If I'm going to pay them, they should know something I don't know, right? Okay? So keep this in mind. You are hiring someone. You are becoming an employer here. So interview them. Make them perform. Make them prove to you that they can do this by what they have done. They need to have sold some homes there in your area. Offering a lot of the franchises in particular and some of the nationals want you to offer a home warranty. It will not increase the value of your home, what it costs on average. It's a bother, and they make a really nice little side commission on it. I wouldn't fool with it. If someone comes and wants to buy your home, and the only thing standing between you selling your $150,000, $100,000, $90,000 home, and the buyer is a $200 warranty, we'll buy a warranty at that point. But having home warranty on the sign does not just make people line up at your door. It's a gimmick for them to make money inside their business, okay? And so just stay away from those things. We used to sell them. I was in that business. I know they really don't make much difference. Now, when it comes to buying a home, home ownership is, of course, a great investment for three main reasons. Number one, as you pay that home off on that 15-year fixed rate mortgage or less, part of that payment is interest. The other part is principal. So as you pay down your debt, it's like a forced savings plan. You are building equity as the value goes up, but also as the debt goes down. So part of you, our automatic savings payment program, a forced savings plan. Now, another great reason you buy a home is it's an inflation hedge. A lot of you are not old enough to have lived in an inflationary marketplace. The last couple of decades, we've seen inflation run 3, 4, 5%. But when I got in the real estate business, the year I got in the real estate business in 1978, that year, the homes in our area inflated 12%. If a home sold 3 months ago, we increased its price, its sister's price that we were going to sell down the street, by 3%, 1% a month, 12% a year. So in a heavy inflation economy, and if that kicks back in at some time, home ownership is great because one of the big parts of inflation is home prices. And if you're in on that ride, you have a hedge against inflation. The third reason it's great to own a home is it grows virtually tax-free. Under current tax law, a single person can sell their home if they've owned it 2 years or more and make up to $250,000 tax-free. You can own it 2 years or more if you're married, filing jointly, and make up to $500,000 tax-free. Now think about this for a second. If you really got up there in home a little ways, and you could buy something that would go up $500,000 every 2 years, and sell it and do it again, you could make $250,000 a year tax-free and move. Have you, isn't that cool? Everybody's going, I think I'm going to get a moving truck. Right? You know, I mean, this is tax-free growth. Other than the Roth IRA and the kids' college funds, there's very few places now that you can have tax-free growth. So home ownership is wonderful from that standpoint. Now, when you're buying, a couple of things to know about and to look forward to. You want to buy title insurance. Title insurance insures against an unclean title. Now, what's an unclean title? An unclean title can be one of several things. And I used to think when I first got in the real estate business that this was just a ripoff. This was one of those gimmicks, just another charge they got you for. And all this is an insurance policy that guarantees you, if it's an owner's policy, if it's a mortgage policy, it guarantees your mortgage company that your title is clean. So if there's any confusion, someone didn't sign off properly at some time or another, and maybe an estate sold the house three owners ago, and Aunt Susie out in Kansas, one heir didn't sign the deed, so that people didn't have clear title to keep passing it. Now all of a sudden Aunt Susie from Kansas shows up, wants her piece of your house. This is not a pretty experience. Title insurance company starts writing checks if that happens, and Aunt Susie goes back to Kansas smiling. Okay? And you're smiling because the home is now yours officially. The other thing that can happen there is if mortgages aren't released properly and other things to where the owners before paid off their mortgage, but the bank never released it. And so there's a cloud on the title still. There's still a lien against the house that's really not there, but it still shows up down at the courthouse. Again, that title company steps in and fixes it. After having bought foreclosures for many years, I'll tell you, I will never in my life buy a piece of real estate without getting title insurance. It is a good buy. If you're buying a home on something more than a standard subdivision lot, always get a survey. If you're buying land out in the country, always get a survey, especially in areas of the country where everything isn't Purina, isn't little boxes everywhere when you fly over it, okay? I'm from Tennessee. We don't have any little boxes when you fly over. We have hills. And the way some of the surveys are drawn in some areas of the country is there was a big oak tree up there in the corner of the field once and a pile of rocks in the other corner, and that's your boundary lines, and the surveyor's looking for that, only it was 1879 that this legal description was drawn out. And that oak tree's been firewood many generations ago. And that pile of rocks, nobody knows what happened to it. And so we're still trying to find the boundaries, which means we have a boundary dispute, and by the time you actually get a certified survey, you might not have a 22-acre tract. You might have a 32-acre tract, and you might have agreed to pay so much an acre rather than a fixed price. And all of a sudden, you've got this huge increase in price that you've contracted to buy. So everything is contingent upon a certified survey unless it's a standard subdivision lot. Never get into that. Realtors' access when you're buying a home to the MLS is good, and it can make house hunting easier. But I will tell you, when you're buying a home, I'm not sure a realtor's the greatest thing always. You've really got to get the right one. And I recommend looking into maybe getting a realtor with an attitude here. One that wants to be a buyer's agent and represent you. Because I'll tell you this, realtors think like retailers. That's good if you're selling. That's not good if you're buying. I grew up in the business, but then when I started buying foreclosures, I was amazed. I would look in the newspaper, find a house being foreclosed on, go find out, okay, it's a $100,000 home, there's $60,000 owed on it, it's going to be foreclosed on Friday. I'm on my cell phone on Monday sitting in front of the house. I look up, see a realtor sign. Out of courtesy, before I went and knocked on the door, I would always call the realtor. Well, a lot of times that's the first time that realtor ever had a clue that house was in foreclosure. Because the seller, in shame and guilt, won't tell them a lot of times, right? And so they're like, foreclosure? What? And I'm going, yeah, Friday. Friday they're not going to own the house anymore. Oh, no. Well, we're asking 110. I said, well, market value is 100. I know, but they wouldn't come down. I said, they're about to. I'll give them $62,000 and you'll take $500 of the $2,000 as your commission. They'll walk with $1,500 and we'll close it in the morning and they get to keep from having a foreclosure happen to them. Well, they'll never do that. I said, fine, then I'll bid on Friday because the bidding at the steps starts at $60,000 cash. And it would take them sometimes 2 days to mentally get their arms around the fact that this was not a position where they could be a negotiator or a retailer. This is dead dog, desperate wholesale situation, right? And they think like a retailer so much that no amount of cold water on some of them would wake them up. So when you're buying, you need someone who doesn't think like a retailer. I want someone who's a really kind and tactful vulture that just circles and finds me a bargain. Now, what to buy when you're buying? Don't buy in the top of the neighborhood. Buy in the bottom of your neighborhood. This also applies to whether you're going to do additions to your home. Now think about this with me for a second. If you own a $100,000 home and you want to do a $50,000 addition, you would effectively have $150,000 invested in this home, correct? If the average home sale on your street is $110,000, you would have overbuilt the neighborhood and you'll never get your addition back out. Why? Because people looking for $150,000 homes don't drive down $110,000 streets, right? They drive down $150,000 streets, so you would be above the top of the neighborhood and you would never get your money back. So what I want to do is be in the bottom half of the price range of the neighborhood. The reason is not only can I fix it up and build on and move on up through that price range and still be within the gap of how the consumer views that neighborhood as I get ready to resell the home, but I get more appreciation coming from the bottom because the top I'm already bumping up against this glass ceiling because the consumer doesn't see that neighborhood as that type of neighborhood. Does that make sense? Say yes.
Yes.
Good. Okay, now, homes appreciate in good neighborhoods. And there are homes are priced based on three things: location, location, and location. You can take a cinder block home that is 900 square feet with a concrete floor and stick it in the rich people's neighborhood, and the stupid thing will bring $100,000 because it's sitting on some expensive dirt and has the right zip code, right? You take this really nice 3,000 or 4,000 square foot home, you dump it over here in the midst of a bunch of $25,000 homes where people are struggling financially, and you can't give the thing away. Location is what matters, not amenities. Where the house is, where the condominium project is, where your ownership is going to dictate how much you're going to get in appreciation. Again, think about the location. Now, am I saying live in a dump in a good end of town? Not necessarily. You may have three children or five children, and so you may need a lot of square foot for the dollar. You may want to move a couple of counties out and get into a little bit of more of a rural setting where you can get a ton of square footage, high-quality home for the dollar. Because what you're looking for there is not the zip code. You're looking for all that space to get those crumb snatchers off in different corners of the house, right? Now, if possible, and you're really thinking to fine-tune your investment, try to buy near water or with a view. Again, I'm from Tennessee, and we build homes sometimes up on the side of these ridiculous Goat Ridge Mountain things, all because you can walk out on the porch and go, whoa, look way down there, there's some lights. And for that statement, you will pay an extra $5,000 to $10,000. You move that home to the bottom of the hill, all of a sudden the price went with it, okay? For some reason, people will pay big time for a view, always have, and so appreciation is always good up where you've got a view. A lake is the same way, and water is the same way. Even a creek is the same way, or a stream, okay? Sometimes a little drainage ditch, if you dress it like a creek, works really good, you know? And I'm amazed about what people will do with water. Now, you get a big lake area, like where there's boating and that kind of a thing going on, you might have $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 homes on one side of the street, similar square footage homes across the street, but that don't touch the water for half of that. Literally across the street, because it touches the water, can double it. It can be that bizarre. We've got an area in my end of town where I grew up. It's absolutely funny, and I hope if you live there, I'm not offending you, but it's just been funny to me since I was a kid. You know, a meadow is a hayfield, okay? Right? And there's this area called Meadow Lake. What this is a pond in the middle of a hayfield. And they built a subdivision around it many, many years ago, okay? And the people that have a home bordering on the Meadow Lake, the pond, are getting $25,000 and $30,000 more for their home than the same home across the street because it's on the Meadow Lake. The pond! It's a duck pond, okay? Give me a break! But there's this perception. I get to wake up and there's mist out there and I could throw a fishing line out. There hadn't been a fish in there in years. You know? You see what I'm saying? But it's this perception with water and a view. Keep that in mind when you're buying. And don't get caught up in the emotion of that stuff and pay too much. But keep that in mind from an investor's viewpoint when you're purchasing. Now, I'm amazed at this. You want to buy big bargains on a house. See, it's the opposite. See, when we start talking about selling a home, what do? We prepared it. We shined it. We did all the cosmetic things that were inexpensive to do, but were elbow grease, right? That we could go in a little bit of painting, a little bit of wallpaper. We cleaned everything. We edged everything. When you get ready to buy, you want to do a whole different deal, right? You want to buy stuff that is cosmetically ugly. You want to buy bargains by overlooking bad landscaping, overlooking ugly shag green carpet, overlooking the Elvis print in the master bedroom. See, if Big Elvi is hanging there in the bedroom, that could be a hint that maybe these people aren't decorators, okay? I don't know. Just a thought. I'm amazed at how people cannot overlook that stuff when they're looking to buy a bargain. I used to buy foreclosures for a living. I bought a home, as an example. I was going to church with this little yuppie couple, and they said, "Dave, if you get one of those foreclosure deals, like, bring it to us, man. We like those deals, man. We want to get a deal." I said, "Okay, that's cool. You got your cash lined up?" Because it's always cash in the real estate, in the foreclosure world, okay? You got to move, and you got to move quick. All right, so I found a home, $140,000 retail home. But it was decorated in 1972, avocado green shag carpet that you had to mow, you know? You know what I'm telling you? You remember this stuff, right? Harvest gold appliances. You remember this stuff? Okay. Seriously ugly, all right? But you can trash some appliances and some carpet. So I buy this $140,000 house at foreclosure for $60,000. I call the little yuppie couple up. I said, "Look, I got it for $60,000. If you'll give me quick profit, you buy it for $65,000, you can buy a $140,000 house under half price." "Hey, great, let's go look at it." Well, we went over there. The weeds are about this tall around it, right? Hadn't been mowed in 3 years, right? We go in, there's this ugly shag carpet, and she walks around. She's trying to be nice, but she just can't contain herself. Finally, she goes out on the back deck. She says, "We just can't do it. I just couldn't live with that carpet." I said, "Look, we're buying this $70,000 under market. What color would you like the entire neighborhood to be carpeted?" Think. Literally, these people, this young couple, could never get their imaginations around this, and they walked off from the deal. I sold it to someone else at a deal. You know? Absolute dumb. Okay? You gotta overlook Mr. Elvis. You gotta overlook the shag. You've gotta do that to get great deals. I remember one of the worst ones I ever did, one of the last real estate deals I ever did before I quit buying real estate and started doing counseling and everything full time, and this whole financial peace thing came unglued. I found a really nice 6,000 square foot, that's a big one, duplex, okay, 3,000 on each side, 4 bedrooms on each side of this thing, big garage under it, all this stuff, really nice deal, in a medium area of town. It was, again, I ran the appraisal on it, it was $140,000. Value, fixed up, it needed a little work here and there, and it had been empty a while, and the bank foreclosed on it before I found it, and I found out about it later. Well, the people that had lived in this home had had kitties. Lots of kitties. And they kept them inside. And I don't think they made it to the litter box very often. And it was August. And it had been shut up a long time. So I went in there, and man, I tell you what, whew, it'll take the paint off a car, man. I mean, it was rough, you know what I mean? And I'm walking through, but I did my little estimate, and I said, "Okay, well, I knew that the bank, it was worth $140 fixed. It needed several thousand dollars worth of odor removal." And so I knew they had foreclosed at $60,000, and I thought if I could buy it for what they've got in it or shortly over that, I could still do the repairs and make a profit on the resale, because there's plenty of room at $140 over $60. You see what I'm saying, right? But that particular bank in all of these bank mergers had really done a dumb thing. They had moved their real estate department to another city. That's a dumb thing because cities are all different on real estate. You got to know where the lines are, you know? You got to know which side of the tracks that is when you cross the tracks. And you don't know that if you're not from there or haven't been there a while. You know what I mean? Those invisible lines, one side of the street's one expense, one side's the other, and there's no reason except it's just always been that way. And if you don't know that because you flew in from out of town, you can make some mistakes. So they had a brand new little lady that was about probably 25 years old in their real estate department, and they sent her up to negotiate the sale of this real estate. And she flew in from another city and hit the ground. I picked her up at the airport. I made sure the house had been closed up all day. And I took this poor lady over to this house. She went in there. By my watch, she was in there 34 seconds. She hit the front door going... I don't think the woman ever smelled cat pee. I mean, it was, oh, man. You know, I after I saw that, I offered them 40. Some expensive cats, I'll tell you what. Bought the house for that, too. Oh, be careful now. See, that's something that I think you can do away with. You might have to burn the house in that case, but... you know, for that matter, if I buy a $140,000 home for $40,000, I can take up the floorboards, right? All the way down to the joists if I have to get the smell out. There's a lot of room in that deal. Okay, so again, it's cosmetic. Ugh. Always buy a home that can be attractive from the street and that has a good basic floor plan. So you want to overlook Elvis, you want to overlook the carpet and some bad landscaping, but if it's got a bad floor plan, if it's ugly to the bone, it can't be fixed, right? Ugly to the bone is expensive to fix. You start tearing out load-bearing walls and doing all this kind of a thing, you may never get your money back. And if you walk up and you look at it and you go, man, this thing is, there's just, you just have to shoot something through the front of it. I mean, it's just ugly. Then you're just baked, okay? We grew up, as I said, in Tennessee, and that's where I started selling real estate first, and we used to have homes where they go along, we still do, where they go along the side of one of these hills, and they cut a road right through the middle of the hill. And they put homes on the bottom of the hill looking up at the street, and ones above the street looking down at the street, right? We called the ones below the street, where you stand on the front porch, we called them oil pan houses, because you could stand on the front porch and look at the oil pans of the cars going by, right? And the ones up on those cliffs, if you didn't put something the right kind of elevation and mount it up in the side of that hill, it got ugly fast. You know what I'm talking about? Well, the first home Sharon and I bought, we thought we got a bargain on. I was doing my bargain Dave deal, and I got a nothing down, and I got this great price. But it was, I mean, it was a great house once you got inside, but it was ugly from the street. Ugly to the bone. I mean, it was a two-story looking thing up on the side of this hill with a front-opening garage door. It was so steep that when the moving truck pulled down the driveway and out into the street, the hitch caught and the back wheels were up off the ground, okay? I'm talking, this thing was perched up there. You know what I'm saying? This is an ugly house. And as you looked up at the house, the driveway ran like right here, and you had to walk across the top of the driveway in front of that front opening garage door and up these stairs to get in the front door. It was the only way to get in the house. Well, I remember one time I came home in an ice storm, and, you know, it was everything's coated in ice, right? And I was really having a good day anyway because this idiot passed me in the ice storm and went into a spin and went all the way around my car, hitting all sides of it, right? So I come home in this mood, right, with my car, and everything you touched was just whoop, boom, you know, fall on your tail end. And so I walk up the side of this thing. I'm mad, and my parents are over visiting my wife and kids. I walk across the top of this driveway and slipped. I hit my back, and I went all the way to the bottom of that driveway. I'm yelling and screaming things we can't say on camera. And my mother looks out the window and says, honey, there's kids out there playing on your driveway. Don't buy a house that fits this category, okay? We couldn't give that thing away when we got ready to sell it. We found out why we got such a bargain, because it was ugly to the bone. And you can't fix ugly to the bone, okay? You can't put a big enough bush in front of something like that to shrink it down, all right? So you've got to think about things that aren't fixable. Buy bargains on things that are fixable, like cosmetics, but structural things and elevation things that are too expensive to fix, do not get into those things because you'll never get out of them. Have the home inspected mechanically and structurally by a certified home inspector. How many times have I talked to consumers on my radio show over the years and they call up and say, but Dave, we didn't know that the wiring wasn't right. We thought the appraiser was going to tell us. The appraiser inspected it. The appraiser doesn't work for you. The appraiser works for the mortgage company. And all they're there to do is make sure there's enough value there that when the mortgage company takes it because you didn't pay your payments, they don't lose too much money. That's all the appraiser does. They are not a home inspector. do not buy a home unless you are a mechanical contractor without a home inspector. It's just a couple of $100s, and in most states, you can actually get most of your sellers to pick up the cost of that, because they're liable if you move in and something's messed up, depending on how the laws in your state are written. Okay? So get a home inspector and negotiate in the process to make them, the seller, pay for it. As a seller, since you have some liability, be willing to pay for a home inspector. That says out loud, I'm proud of my house. Well, home inspectors mess up deals. Yes, some of them do. Some of them are idiots, and they see their job is to go in and pick everything apart. But most of them do a very professional job and understand that if all they do is go around and blow deals, that the realtors aren't going to call them back to use them, okay? So there's a little bit of give and take in here, and most home inspectors that I know do an excellent job, and you should get one. Keep in mind when you're dealing with appraisers that an appraisal of real estate is an opinion of value. And this is an opinion from a human. Sometimes in and around the real estate business and the mortgage business, we begin to think that realtors and or especially appraisers are somehow have insight from God about the value of this house. They really don't. They pull a couple of other homes that are similar and that have sold recently, and they adjust for differences, and they come up with a comparable value. They pull what are called three comps. Three comparable sales in your area, adjust for the floor plan and floor square footage differences and amenity differences, and voila, come up with a value. It is not rocket science to do a residential real estate appraisal. But some appraisers sometimes get confused. And I don't want to offend you appraisers that do a good job, but sometimes they get a little ego thing going. Having done as many real estate deals as I've done, I've run into some disasters of humans that had the word appraisal on their business card. I had one time we sold a $162,000 home for $162,500. The appraiser got a copy of the contract before they went to appraise the home. Came back and appraised the home, not at $162,500, but at $162,250. This moron thinks he knows within $250 what a $160,000 house is worth. No way. Not a chance. Okay? Not that good. So we put him on the list of appraisers never to let on our property again under any circumstances, because I'm not going to deal with a wacko egomaniac like that. These are an opinion of value. Now, if you get a professional appraisal, though, let me tell you, 99.99% of the time, they're going to be more accurate than your feelings about your home. Okay? Because you don't have a really good perception about what's going on. You love it a little too much or you hate it a little too much, and you can't really keep objectivity about what the real value is. So a good appraiser, 99.99% of the time, is going to give you a much better opinion of value than you are. Now let's look at mortgages. The first thing about mortgages we want to remember is we want to hate debt. The best mortgage plan I know of is the 100% down plan. Well, Dave, that's not realistic. You can't get people to do that. It doesn't happen. Let me tell you, I am convinced that if you will live like no one else, you'll be able to live like no one else. I had a 24-year-old young man call me. Well, he was 29 when he called me. He was from Cleveland. Did this on the radio show one day. He said, Dave, I've been really blessed. I've made really good money all of my life. He said, when I got out of college, I was making $80,000 a year. I'm a salesman and I'm really good. I would say $80,000 a year at 24 years old is a really good income, wouldn't you? But he said, I grew up with a granddaddy who was super hyper conservative and told me if I ever borrowed a dime, he'd break both my legs. And he said, I'll tell you what I did. My granddaddy got to my heart. And he said, I decided since I was making all that money, I was going to live differently. And I lived on only $50,000 a year. Oh, darn, I hate that. And he saved $30,000 a year from 24 to 29. 30,000 times 5 is 150,000 and paid cash for his first home. While all his friends ran out and bought a home. You need to buy a home. You need to buy a home. You need to buy a home right now. You got to get a house. You got to get a house. I mean, you've been married 32 minutes. You hadn't got a house. And he was living in an old garage apartment and they were all making fun of him. And he's 30 years old. With a paid-for home, and he's set for life. Because if he takes that house payment, he'll have $10, $20, $30 million by retirement because of the mindset and the heart that his grandfather had passed on to him. So, always remember to hate mortgages and try to do something like the 100% down plan. You could think like that kid. I know that's wild. I know that's different. But if you want to be weird, that'd be a good plan, because normal in North America is broke. If I can't get you to go all the way to the 100% down plan, that's what we do. We don't borrow money, period, in our home, under any circumstances. But if I can't get you to go there, what if I could get you to be so radical as to put down 50% and finance it on 7 years like a car? Ooh, that's different. Wild, Dave. Or maybe even put down, I don't know, 70%? Think different. Run the math. Be a little patient. Live like no one else. So later, you can live like no one else. Delaying pleasure is a sign of maturity. But if we're going to do a mortgage, let's learn to do it right. And let's learn some guidelines that we don't break no matter what. Get a payment of no more than 25% of your take-home pay. Of your take-home pay, now that's not including 401ks. I'm talking about after taxes, okay? Now, 25% of your take-home pay, let me tell you, you can qualify with a mortgage company for almost double that. Almost double that. And that will get you in a mess. You will be what's called house poor. You will have such large house payments that there will be no savings for emergencies. There will be no savings for the next car purchase, so you will get into car debt. There will be no savings for Christmas or vacation, so you'll have credit card debt. There will be no savings for college, so your kids will have college debt, okay? So you're going towards debt just because you became house poor because you bought too much home. No more than 25% take-home pay on a 15-year fixed with at least a 10% down payment. Now, I would prefer a 20% down payment, and I'll show you why in a little while. But on a first home, at least a 10% down payment. This nothing down first-time home buyer plan stuff gets young couples in trouble every day. Well, they need to be able to get started. How did other generations do it? They rented cheap. They didn't go rent some palace health club thing. Well, it's got 17 racquetball courts and its own masseuse. And this is our first apartment. Please, give me a break. Go rent a junky place over somebody's garage, okay? And get your life started that way. Pile up a huge pile of cash, and then you can hire a full-time masseuse to live in the spare bedroom in this mansion you buy later, okay? Think about this deal, all right? Don't be falling for all their gimmicks, and you'll be a renter all your life if you do that. Rent cheap. Rent is patience money because it is going down a rat hole. So you don't want to do it long. So you want to rent as cheap as you can so you can pile up faster and get into something as fast as you can. Let's look at a 15-year versus a 30-year mortgage. Take a $95,000 loan at 8%. On 15 years, that's a $907 payment. On 30 years, that's a $697 payment. That's $210 difference. This $95,000 loan, after 10 years, has a balance of $44,000. After 10 years, on the 30-year loan, it has an $83,000 balance. And on the 30-year mortgage, during that 10 years, you have paid $83,600 into the mortgage company and have only reduced your principal by $12,000. 98% of your payments in a 30-year mortgage in the first 2 years go to interest. You do not reduce principal at all to amount to anything. Do not get into a 30-year mortgage under any circumstance. But, I don't want to hear about your buts, okay? Don't do it. Don't do it. It is a bad way. You will get in a mess, all right? It is what normal people do. Well, Dave, I have a 30-year now. What should I do? Well, if it's at a good interest rate, pay it like a 15. If it's at a high interest rate compared to today's market, refinance it down to that lower interest rate, and when you do, put it on a 15. But if you pay a 30 like a 15, it'll pay out. So never refinance just to convert a 30 to a 15 if you've already got one. Pay extra. But never under any circumstances when you're doing a new mortgage deal do you do a 30-year and promise to pay extra. Because you never will prom dress breath. It won't happen. Okay? I know about life happening. And all these little things come up and you won't pay extra. You lie to yourself. I did it for years. When I quit lying to myself, it's when I started building wealth. Now, when it comes to mortgages, what you need to understand are the different types. The adjustable rate mortgage, were brought on with the advent of high interest rate in the early 1980s. The concept of the adjustable rate mortgage, from the banker's viewpoint, is to transfer the risk of higher interest rates to the borrower. If you have an adjustable rate mortgage, refinance it immediately. Immediately. You are probably sitting, if you're watching this tape at home, or you're in this audience for sure, you are probably sitting in some of the lowest interest rate environment we've seen in 30 and 35 years. Get refinanced. Why are you adjusting, allowing them to adjust, when we're at a floor? Where is it going from there on average? But up. This isn't hard to predict. Well, I'm playing. You're not playing a game. You're playing with snakes. You're going to get bit. Okay? Do not do the adjustable rate loan. And besides that, if you have an adjustable rate loan, you need to go back and do a full audit of it. The FDIC did a study recently that said 35% of the ARMs are adjusted improperly. So if you have an adjustable rate loan, go to the addendum section later on when we're through with the lesson, and it will teach you how to measure whether or not your adjustable rate loan was adjusted properly based on the index that you have, and walk you through that. Also, if you need to know whether you need to refinance or you want to be able to calculate a payment on a possible refinance, we've put all of that in your addendums. You've got all kinds of little worksheets back there to learn about real estate on your particular individual questions. Let's look at the different kinds of mortgages. Number one, conventional mortgages are usually through Fannie Mae or Ginnie Mae. Government National Mortgage Association is Ginnie Mae. Federal National Mortgage Association is Fannie Mae, FNMA. Those are conventional loans. A conventional loan, if you're going to do your 15 or 20 or 5 or 10% down routine, is the best route to go as a standard mortgage. You will find private mortgage insurance there, PMI. If you do not put down at least a 20% down payment, you will be charged private mortgage insurance. The mortgage company will make you take that. That is about $70 a month per $100,000 borrowed. So if you have a $100,000 mortgage, you're paying an extra $840 a year to an insurance company to buy foreclosure insurance. That's what PMI is. Private mortgage insurance is foreclosure insurance that pays the mortgage company in case they have to foreclose on you and lose money on you. If you put down 20%, they do not require private mortgage insurance. Now, how many of you have a conventional loan today? Good. Listen carefully to me, okay? If you've paid your home down or it has increased in value to where you now have the 20% room, 20% loan to value ratio, or an 80% loan to value ratio, you have 20% equity, you can force them to drop the PMI, the private mortgage insurance. Call your mortgage company. If your loan was taken out lately, they are required by law to automatically drop it when it goes to 22% equity position. Federal law now requires them to do that. If you have an older conventional loan, you may have to pay for an appraisal that they approve of. That'll cost you $300 to $500 depending on the area of the country that you're in. And then that proves to them that the home is worth at least 20% more than is owed on it by a certified appraiser. Then you can get rid of that $840 per $100,000 expense a year. So to get rid of the PMI. With the conventional loan, that's how that works. Now, with other kinds of loans, you've got a different situation. The FHA is the Federal Housing Administration with the Department of HUD, Housing and Urban Development. This is a federally guaranteed loan. What that means is the lender is guaranteed they're not going to lose any money by the federal government. Okay, that's what an FHA loan is. Most people do these with around a 3% down payment, and these loans are more expensive. The only reason people ever do an FHA loan is they don't have enough down payment. Otherwise, they didn't understand the fees. Okay, FHA loans are not a good deal for the consumer. The only reason people do them is it's a minimal down payment and a way to get in. Same thing with the Veterans Administration, the VA loans. Again, with a good down payment, the conventional loan is a better deal. And this, again, is where the federal government is guaranteeing the bank they won't lose money on you. Both of these programs have a pool built in, a mortgage insurance pool again, kind of like the private mortgage insurance, but this is called an MIP, a mortgage insurance premium, built in, and you can't get rid of it with an FHA and a VA. It's there forever and ever. It's one of the reasons that these two loans are more expensive. The only reason a veteran would ever use his VA is if he or she did not have a down payment. The VA is not a good loan, okay? It's not a good loan if you've got 10 or 20% down. The only reason the veteran does it is to get into a home that they really couldn't afford in the first place. Number four is owner financing. Owner financing is when you pay the owner over time, which makes the owner the mortgage holder. Let's say that Mark and Paula owned a home, okay? And Dave and Sharon wanted to buy it from them. They had the home, as an example, paid for. Maybe it was a $100,000 home, and we wouldn't go into debt, but for our examples, we'll go into debt for a second. I can't stand this. Whew, it's killing me already. Now, we would put down $20,000, give them $20,000, and sign an IOU, a note and a mortgage, or a deed of trust and a mortgage note, and promise to pay them payments on that other $80,000. And instead of getting their $80,000, they get payments, okay? That is owner financing. Most people have heard of that. Now, if you have an owner financing deal, these can be a great way to finance because basically there are no rules. The reason there's no rules is it's whatever we can sit down and come up with that we can both feel good about. I mean, if he's got an old home there he's trying to get rid of and it's got to have a lot of work, I might say, well, I'm not going to pay payments for 2 years while I do the work. Okay, we'll just sign that up. We can dream up whatever we want, right? Or he might have a primo house and he can get a better interest rate on that than he could get on his money somewhere else. And he might be on the winning side of that negotiation, okay? So it can be a great way. It's whatever we can dream up. However you want to design it, however creative you want to get, you can do that with owner financing. Now, let me give you a hint. Any of you in here that have a home that is owner financed, where you're paying an individual back over time, while interest rates are low, call them up. Let's pretend that this gentleman right here, what's your first name, sir?
Steve.
Steve. Let's pretend that Steve owes a man $60,000 on a note on his home. And that man is over in another county or over in another state somewhere, sold the home to Steve, and Steve's been paying him payments along for several years. Okay? If Steve were to call that guy up and go, I owe you $60,000, but I tell you what, I'd like to buy that mortgage from you. And I'll offer you $40,000 for it. If I give you $40,000 cash today, you can just walk away. Or I can pay my payments over the next 15 years as we've agreed. Either one. And the guy's going, $40,000 cash? Because most people would like to see cash because most people are broke. Right? In most cases, they would like to see that money. And you can buy your own mortgage out at a discount. So call the mortgage company and get kind of the refinance thing going and then call the mortgage holder and say, I'd like to buy your mortgage. Because if they took that mortgage and wanted to sell it to another investor, it would be discounted. It doesn't have a face value in the marketplace, okay? If they wanted to sell that piece of paper, it would be discounted from 60 down to 40 anyway if they needed quick cash. And they can do that, okay? That's legal. You ever had your mortgage company sell your mortgage around to different ones? Change names every week sometimes, doesn't it? It's the same thing. Individuals can do that, but it's discounted in the individual owner finance market. So Steve could call and offer the guy 40. He'll take it in most cases. So get your financing lined up, call and offer him a discount. I may have just made someone in here $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 if they take advantage of that advice. Now let me tell you, real estate is a lot of fun. It's a place to make some money, but it's a place to lose some money. Be patient and move slow. Take your time. Take lots of time. If you take so much time that you miss the deal, that's okay. Be patient and take your time. Then you can get a bargain. When you get ready to sell, shine it up, fix it up, make it as nice as you possibly can, and then make some serious money on your real estate.
We like that we found out about the VA loan because he's eligible for that, and we didn't realize it was that the conventional loan would be better with the down payment.
You think like a retailer. You package it. You make it look pretty and attractive from the curb. You make it look larger. It's the elbow grease concept that they've talked about. It didn't necessarily cost a lot of money, but you just put some sweat equity in making it look pretty.
She found this out in real estate when somebody makes an offer. If you go over to them and talk to them direct with this, they've offered you $150,000, you're asking $170,000, and here's $10,000 down. If you're showing them that they're a lot more able to think about coming around, you know, coming off of it.
We got a fixer-upper. Mm-hmm. Which is what he says
right.
to get.
That's right.
And, you know,
congratulations.
Less because of, you know, and we're now, you know, 3 years later looking and saying, we did good.
Credit cards reek.